Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. We have a new man of the hour. The man of the hour in Davos at the big Davos Finance Conference is Alistair Darling. D-A-R-L-I-N-G, Alistair Darling. He is Chancellor of the Exchequer over in the United Kingdom. Most of my listeners would know that I talked about, I think in my first episode, I talked about Lehman Brothers started this whole entire crisis, this financial crisis, which has led to a lot more in 2008. And someone at the Treasury let Lehman Brothers go under. Well, no one's really known who it was or what it was. No one knew that. George Soros has talked about time and time again. Anglo banking has come into a crisis because of the collapse of Lehman Brothers. Well, Hank Paulson released his released a book, and the book is getting a lot of attention. And you know, his memoir is called On the Brink, and basically, Alistair Darling, the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the UK. As Lehman was going under, they wanted an emergency merger with Barclays. Barclays is a big financial institution in the UK. And they wanted him to speed things up or to do some things to help it, and he said no. He said he wouldn't do it. He said let it go out of business. It's pretty rough. Pretty rough customer for the United Kingdom. One of the challenges with a position like Chancellor of the Exchequer or his previous position, Secretary of State for Trade and Industry, some of these guys have a lot of power, and when you put them there, they might not do what you want them to do. They at the last minute, one guy at the last minute in a position like that can cause havoc across the world, as we've seen. You know, the whole entire house, all you have to do is look at a stock chart, pull up a stock chart of the S&P 500, and go like a monthly stock chart and look back at 2008. It looks like a demon drop. Everything in the planet was going down. And this process started with Lehman Brothers. It was a catalyst. Now, granted, it was set up for it. Sure. Anything could have caused it, but he did. And so he was at Davos, and now they're grilling him at Davos, and he laughs at the bankers and quote, "Don't feel sorry for yourselves." He is basically a Scotsman, basically. I never thought highly of him until I found this out. He sounds a little ruthless. But anyways, he's a great nephew of Sir William Darling, who was a Conservative MP for Edinburgh. He is a Scotsman, and he was basically he was a supporter at the age 23. He was a Marxist. He's like a communist, you know, international Marxist group, the British section of the Trotskyite Fourth International, that type of thing. I always assumed he was kind of a neocon, but not anymore, not after hearing this, because the neocons were having a fit over this one. Well, that's their power, money. But you don't have money power when he puts a bigger hole in your balloon. So what happened after the crash of 87, to go a little more elaborate, because I was asked to go more elaborate on this stuff, because I don't talk about finance stuff a lot. After the crash of 87, they started interfering. They started blowing air into this balloon. And let's call the world financial system like a big balloon. The big balloon needs air. And air keeps it going. And air is liquidity, and that's all dollars, because the dollar is reserve status currency. And the dollar is backed by a private central bank called the Federal Reserve. And this balloon had itself a hole in the crash of 87, but they shoved a bunch of air in it and made the balloon bigger. and you had a huge ramp up in, it went quiet for a little bit, a few years in the 90s and whatnot, and then it ramped up and it really took off and we had a huge stock market bubble. You might remember that. You know, Yahoo, the internet craze, Amazon, everything else. And then, in 1998, you had the Asian collapse. Another hole came in the bloom. They didn't have no new world order. You know, ideally, what these, private central bankers like to do, the pink rabbit banksters and elitesters is what they like to do. Jew and Gentile alike has nothing to do with that. But what they like to do is they like to get a new balloon, which is kind of common sense. If your balloon's got a new hole, got a hole in it, you better find a new balloon. You know, you let the balloon deflate in an orderly way and you move some air over to your new balloon. Well, they didn't get a North American Union. I don't see one. I don't see a new central bank. They didn't get a global central bank. I don't see one. I guess the Red Hippo could come out and give them one, and an anti-rabbit could get them one or something. But you don't see a global central bank. No one wants what they have to offer. No one wants their deal. But anyways, in 1998, they didn't have it either, and the hole came in. The hole got a little bit bigger. They shoved a bunch of air in it. And then you had a huge housing bubble. All this is liquidity driven. It didn't really go into wheat and corn and stuff like that. This air is going into other types of assets. But it is nonetheless, these assets are blowing up. You might remember the housing bubble. It was ridiculous. Zero down mortgages and everything else. Then coming in 2008, you got problems because anything past 2007, things had the potential to really start going to pieces. I was always told past 2007, everything's going to come to pieces, and that's kind of what's happened. But in 2008, you had the Lehman Brothers, you had the banking crisis caused that started kind of unraveling from the housing market. It was starting to unravel. It was just all it needed was a little pinprick to make the hole in the balloon bigger. And Alistair Darling at the last minute comes in and says, no, that's not going to happen. I'm not speeding up anything. And they let Lehman Brothers collapse. And, of course, that started the current crisis to this day. And, of course, as long as you're shoving air into the balloon, you're okay. The problem is that these holes get bigger and bigger, and you got to get a new balloon because this private central banking stuff is I don't care whether it's 15th century France, 17th century Spain. Or 15th century Spain, 17th century France. It doesn't matter how you trace this stuff back, and it goes all the way back. These private central banks, these concepts, they may change a little bit of this or a little bit of that, but it always, it's deeply flawed. It's a flawed construct. A bank can only loan money. A private bank can only loan money. It can only loan the principal. It can't pay down interest, so the interest grows. And it does magic on paper for a while, but it's like a Ponzi scheme almost. A little bit more sophisticated than the average. I mean, it's a little more sophisticated than the average Ponzi scheme, but most people would describe private central bank as kind of like a Bernie Madoff. But it is problematic, because you're not issuing a true currency. You're loaning money. So who's going to pay down the debt? And typically, they move from one to the other and let it collapse and then move on and consolidate power. And, you know, obviously you destroy countries doing that, but, someone's really had a peg on them, from what it looks like to me. Pushing them at the last minute and then letting the thing deflate. And, of course, they've tried to get the ball going with stock markets yet again. But the challenge with that is that now everyone's backing out on them. You just have a limited time window for any type of private central bank, it seems to me. And post the Federal Reserve System of America, you had a clock on their head. They didn't have the hundreds of years they had in Rome or before the currency got debased. This stuff has been going downhill fast and almost from the get-go. Especially post 1950, you can run a private central bank and make it workable. Okay, white rabbits can, but those Jew rabbits, they seem to be cursed or something. everything they touch, when they touch something like that, you can put a clock on it; it's going down. But he's the man. He's the one that did it. It wasn't anyone in America. It was Alistair Darling. Nixed it and basically accelerate the crisis. And also there's the Russian scenario. You know, they're raising a cane at Russia, approaching China, telling them to sell GSE, government sponsored entity, bonds like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You know, housing was, on the eve of really going bust. You know, it was starting to go bust and they dumped all their holdings. It wasn't a lot, 65, 70 billion. enough to spook people, apparently. Obviously, central banks don't go around talking about dumping stuff, and the Russians have denied it, but they probably did it. That's funny. Why would they invest in garbage assets if they know they're garbage? They're going to get out of it the first chance they can. And with Anglo banking coming into crisis, it's a chance for them to dump the rest of their stuff. They have been slowly diversifying. You know, talking about pricing oil and oil and rubles, that's like the grapes of wrath right there. You know, the dollar, the oil was prior to being priced in dollar, oil was priced in British pound sterling. And in the Great Depression, they moved it to dollars, and now oil is priced in dollars along every other along with every other commodity. It's a very advantageous position that Russia is eyeing. But it is a banking system prone to scarcity. And right now, what you're seeing is every commodity in the world is dropping. Stocks are dropping. And it was a scenario we saw in 2008. And the dollar goes through the roof. Why is the dollar going through the roof? You know, most people think the dollar is going to be shot all to hell and all that kind of stuff. Because there's a shortage of air. The balloon needs air. And the balloon's so big, it's so broad, there's so many liquidity-driven assets that all of them are fighting for air. And if you got all these people fighting for air and air is scarce, well, the price of air just went up. You know, it's so ridiculous, it's so big that it can't get bigger. One of those type of scenarios. It doesn't matter how much you print, it doesn't matter and it's not just about printing money, buying government, every scheme you could think of to put liquidity in the thing they've done. Well, sooner or later, you just run out of options. There's only so much. If you start puncturing a balloon, you can get a few people together to keep blowing on it. But sooner or later, that hole's going to get too big, and it's just self-defeating. So they've had a clock on their head on this. And this is interesting to see how this comes out. But it is a classic case of private central banking. That's why the dollar is going through the roof, in my opinion. These are all just my opinions. But that is the fundamental flaw, that now you end up in the direct opposite of what most economists think, that there's going to be a wild inflation. Not necessarily. That may come later. But usually you're going to get deflationary collapse because you can't keep blowing air into the thing. The thing is starved for air, and you've got all these people. It doesn't matter whether it's Koreans or all these different countries linked to dollars that are fighting for dollars. And what are they doing? They got to walk out and buy. They got to buy air. So it's kind of an interesting, very unique scenario, very unique stuff going on. I was asked where to put the money or where I'm putting my money. It's like a Monopoly board. I don't know if you ever played Monopoly. And someone's getting beat real bad or something, and they just throw everything off the board. Well, that's kind of, in my opinion, what's happening. It doesn't matter where you're at in the world. Everything's going to get thrown off the board, and everyone's starting over again with it's not going to be an end of the world type thing. You know, but for some people will be probably, but it's like a Monopoly board. Everything starts over type of, it's not necessarily bad unless you're super rich or tied to your assets. Then it might be pretty bad for you. But if you, the only thing you care about is, I shouldn't say that. It's basically like everything getting thrown off a Monopoly board. I'm psychologically prepared for that. So in other words, the Chinese renminbi or this currency or that currency. Well, if you throw everything off the Monopoly board, the people that would do well immediately get things back pretty quickly would be a German, Russian, Italian asset axis. China could do a few things internally. But China, you see, is heavily wedded to this stuff. And they've tried to diversify away from it to insulate themselves. But let's face it, one section of the Chinese is their partner. And that's the update on economics. So I don't have gold. No, gold will probably plummet. Everything, like in 2008, everything went down every single day, and the dollar kept going up. They were fighting for air, and that's how deflationary stuff works. Everything goes down, and it keeps going down, and nothing goes up, except dollars and sometimes U.S. Treasury bonds in this type of situation will go up at first. But could you have inflation? Yeah, eventually, but it'll be over with. They're going to, I think they're going to try to pull out a new balloon or something, but even that won't work. So this should be interesting to see how this goes. And of course, most of you are noticing the conflict with China picking up. I don't know where this war is going to start. I'm always asked where I think it's going to start. I have several different if-thens in mind, but it need not start anywhere in particular. There's a handful of different places it can start. Is China part of it? Yeah, I would say so. Someone asked me if I thought they were trying to pull some deal with China you know, where they go to war and then they pull off a merger and then they let all the, you know, a typical commie type operating tactics where they go to war, but they're not really at war, and then they let out all the prisoners and whatnot to run around terrorizing Americans. You know, typical communist type of stuff. A fake, well, they've done this stuff in Europe for hundreds of years. You have two princes go to war, but neither one of them really at war. They're just getting rid of people. And then afterwards, they put a bunch of wild animals in charge to rule a bunch of poor Europeans, that type of thing. You know, let all the, in America, you have all kinds of Mexicans and blacks in jail, let them out and give them, you know what I'm saying? Typical commie-style stuff. The problem with that, I'm sure someone would like to do that, but China's not the best partner in the world for that, and they know that. Russia would be the ideal partner for that, just not for the neocons. Yeah, you wouldn't want neocons. That would be a nightmare if see Russian troops on the ground in America. But the Chinese can do some sabotage. The Chinese can do some espionage. The Chinese are not a good partner for a big takedown like that simply because they don't have the equipment. They're not what they've been billed as, and they don't want problems. Right now you got Taiwan, and who knows what they've sold to Taiwan. You know, everyone says, well, China's only 75 miles away from Taiwan. They'll go in there and invade that, but they don't understand there's another side of that equation. Taiwan's only 75 miles from China. And Taiwan's a big stick, and I don't know that some elements of China, not what you see is what you get elements, but wide sky elements in China want to get rid of a bunch of Chinese. You know, I told you this is stuff in Asia. There's two deals. There's one that you think of as more Japanese and one that you think of as Maoist. And, they don't get along. No, they do not. The blood flows between these groups, and it is wide sky because we always assume all Asians are on the same page and everything else. Well, there's not a lot of trust between Asian groups, but there is one strain that seemed to have their act together, in my opinion. And they're going to use this as a big opportunity, and they would most certainly be our partners. You know, the Japanese will always go out of their way to work with us, always. If you act like a white rabbit, they will look up to you and everything else. I mean, they have a lot of respect for us, believe it or not. You wonder why, but they have a tremendous amount of respect for Germany. This stuff goes back a long ways, a lot longer than any 400 or 500 years. They know all kinds of interesting stuff. So we'll have to see what Taiwan's going to be used for, a big trip hammer or something. But, you know, you've seen these Taiwanese build semiconductors. You know, they take a semiconductor plant and they rebuild it in Taiwan. Who knows what they have built there? I don't know. One can only imagine. But there's so many different scenarios in my head. You know, the whole world goes up, and that's kind of what I expect. But that's just one corner of the planet. There's all these other problems everywhere else. I was asked if I expect some kind of big disaster, you know, 2012 type disaster stuff. No, not really. I mean, you know, when someone asks me, do I expect a disaster? I say, you know, for who? There's always a disaster happening for somebody. I've seen all kinds of disasters in my lifetime. For who? You mean like some disaster where the world gets wiped out by a giant tidal wave and everyone goes extinct? No. I would expect the world to continue, and I expect the white rabbits to do very well in this scenario. We're at the time on the calendar where we're going to start getting treats. Depending on how you define treats, but we're going to start getting treats. And our Godzilla has always been there for us. We ignore her. We don't pay attention to her. Most of us don't even believe in her. All the non-whites believe in her. Yeah, I'm going to go into that later on. I'm going to talk about what the non-whites, how the non-whites are all, are completely white supremacists. Many non-whites are. I'm going to go into that last because I think it's an interesting paradox. Something I used to see in myself. But I don't expect any wild big disasters. No, I don't expect, you know, like, do I expect, you know, I was in New York City actually after September 11th. And, I don't know, it wasn't a year later. But it was sometime after that. Not quite a year later. And a friend of mine was giving research on potential disasters. You know, he was talking about potential disasters and what some smart guys were saying. Like earthquakes. We're seeing all kinds of earthquakes. I mean, I got my pizza on time. I got my carrot pizza on time. So, you know, white rabbits are always okay. These old-timers that worry about that don't understand white rabbits. They're always okay. And so he was going on about this, you know, Well, what would you do, Oris, if a tidal wave hit New York and earthquake broke off part of the thing and down Washington, D.C., and Florida went off into the ocean and California went off to the ocean and, you know, the Great Lakes opened up and emptied out in the Mississippi? And I'm like, wow, if I'm still alive, I think we'd do quite well after that. I mean, right, you know, what would you do if you were in New York? I said, I'd go down to, there was actually a surf shop in Manhattan. Yeah, there are. You can buy anything in Manhattan. There's a surf shop there. Surfboards, actual surfboards. I said I'd buy the biggest surfboard I could. I'd get out of the biggest building I could, and I'd aim for Appalachia and hit that tidal wave square on. I mean, if you're going to go, you're going to go. Yeah, no use getting all bent out of shape like that. I mean, you know, you should prepare. White rabbits are always prepared. I remember when I was little, I went through a couple twisters, a couple little tornadoes and whatnot. And afterwards, there's no running water. There's, you know, everything's down for a while, that type of thing. And all the white rabbits, all the this time, you know, your folks are at work, and I was a latchkey kid, which means both my parents had to work. I think that's what they call us. You know, I take a key and I let myself in the house, and I had to watch myself a lot because yeah, I have a brother, but he wasn't around a lot. He's a lot older than me, so I'd kind of watch myself. And there's always, like, you know, one housewife at home in the neighborhood, but what can she do? So anyways, we're sitting here eating all our canned food and stuff like that. We got all kinds of food. And everyone keeps on asking each other if anyone's hungry. Everyone keeps showing up, all these little white kids, all these little latchkey kids. We had all kinds of stuff. You know, most other rabbits may starve, but we won't. White rabbits are pretty clever. And if they do start starving, trust me, there's all kinds of other rabbits for them to eat. They'll put those Mexicans on a big flour tortilla and start eating them. They will, too. White rabbits, you know, I've seen some of the little skinniest white rabbits, lose their temper. I remember these old, white rabbits will always surprise you. Those old CRT monitors, you know, now everything's a flat panel, but, you know, for the longest time, computers had these old CRT monitors. They're huge, and there was a big, big monitor. These were like 21-inch monitors, and the thing weighed probably 100 pounds, maybe more. Huge 21-inch monitor, big, thick, like a big TV. And, you know, you see these little white, I've seen a little white rabbit guy, a little skinny guy get upset and heave one of those. He could have killed somebody. But it's pretty funny stuff. But, you know, don't underestimate white rabbits. And when it comes to disaster, you know, the government tells you to be prepared because they're not going to be there for you, and they're serious. So, you know, I worry about clean water. You can do minimal stuff and set yourself up, and most white rabbits do, but I don't worry about them because, you know, I have too many memories of all the little white rabbits sitting around with all kinds of food. Many other rabbits didn't, but in our neighborhood, everyone was okay. Yeah, it's funny stuff, but no, if you see a big tidal wave coming, get the biggest surfboard you can find and aim for the biggest white mountainous community. You may hit them. You may get lucky. Maybe the story of the decade. You know, you may hit all the way to Appalachia and marry yourself one of those country girls. Who knows? It could be funny. But I wouldn't expect anything out of the unusual for us. Life will go on. We'll be okay. You could see an increase. We're seeing increased numbers of earthquakes and stuff like that. And you could see anything, I guess. You know, I expect a big war. That's ambiguous because I have a series of if-thens, and they get a little too far out there. I don't know. I got to wait till it starts and wait till see how it rolls along. But I don't expect to see what most of you would think, because typically when a banking structure like this goes down, when Anglosphere goes down, you're going to go down and then the country's going to get split up and then you're going to go into consolidation. This is not a normal walk in the park. The parties have been planning this type of thing for a long time, a lot longer than you'd believe if I told you. So this stuff is, this is not a normal walk in the park. I've explained that to you. This is going to be pretty interesting, and we're going to learn all about our race afterwards, which is good because I got a lot of questions. In the next story, I've got a very funny adoption story for you guys. You know how these white rabbits are always adopting everything. I got a very funny adoption story I'm going to tell you next, and it's a pretty interesting story about these white rabbits that adopted one of these exotic adoptions, and I'll be back with you with that. I got a funny story to share with my listeners. It's about an adoption. It's about a typical white rabbit adoption. You know, white rabbits are always adopting other little rabbits and anything else they can get their hands on to raise as their own. You know, they treat all little animals equally. Well, these white rabbit family adopted Little Dilly. Little Dilly didn't have a mama. And so they adopted little Dilly, and they had her sent in, and or they went and got her. And little Dilly came home, and little Dilly was just a baby, just a little baby Dilly. Pretty exotic, an adoption, one of these exotic adoptions that White Rabbit's doing. And little Dilly was she had never been in a house in America before. Never. She had never had pasteurized milk and stuff like that. But little Dilly came to live with this couple, and this couple didn't have any children at home, and she was allowed to pretty much do whatever she wanted to do. Yeah, little Dilly became quite of she's pretty destructive, as you can imagine, because she had never seen running water, but she learned how to turn on the faucet. They taught her that. She had never seen lights before, but she learned, of course, how to flick on the light. Not too difficult to learn. But Dilly ended up being a pretty interesting adoption and pretty clever girl. And she learned all kinds of tricks. And little Dilly now is 5, and she's into all her schoolwork and all that kind of stuff like that. You know, they're teaching her stuff. You know, White Rabbits have to teach their adoptees all kinds of stuff. You know, I mean, they had to teach her actually how to turn on a faucet, if you can believe that. But, you know, she never ate ice cream until she came to live with this family. You know, and little Dilly likes her ice cream. She likes vanilla ice cream. And so little Dilly has her own bedroom. She never had her own bedroom before, would have no hope of having her own bedroom. Yeah, it's kind of a typical adoption that most of you have heard about. Yeah, but it's a typical type of adoption story I talk about. See, little Dilly has something going for her in my book. Yeah, adopting little Dilly wasn't genocidal for us. You see, Dilly's not some exotic little rabbit like you're thinking. No, Dilly's a deer. Yeah, I caught you thinking, didn't I? Yeah, Dilly's a deer. Dilly's a four-legged friend. They adopted a little doe, a little deer. She eat ice cream, sure. She could turn on the water faucet. They taught her that. They taught her how to turn on the light. She's a bright deer. She's a little doe, 5-year-old doe. Mother wouldn't rejected her, and they wouldn't picked her up, felt bad for her, and brought her home. She's an indigenous inhabitant of Ohio, and her family has been in Ohio for tens of thousands of years. But they adopted little Dilly, the deer. Yeah, white rabbits treat all rabbits like all animals equal. You can't tell the difference. If you tell an adoption story about Dilly the deer, it would sound like an adoption story about the little Haitian rabbit, the little exotic Haitian rabbit, with one differential. Dilly can't breed with us, and Dilly can't vote. So Dilly's okay, because white rabbits are always going to have exotic pets and exotic adoptions. They're always going to treat all animals equally, so might as well let them adopt something that's harmless to us. I mean, granted, she could tear up a house. She's a deer. But they adopted them a deer. I was asked a good question by a listener. He's like, well, you talk about white rabbits treat everyone like the bears, but there's something else. What happens when they adopt a bear? So I thought I'd flip the script. I'd tell you what I do when they start talking adoption, because they're always talking adoption. Right now they're talking Haitian adoption. And that was one I saw on Fox News, and I looked up because it was so funny. You can't tell what they're adopting. You can't tell the difference between a white rabbit adopting a dog, bringing a dog home, caring for a little sick bird in the UK, caring for some pet rat in Germany, adopting, taking care of a little baby seal, and a little speckly brown rabbit. You cannot tell the difference unless you tell them. You can't. You can't. You have to tell them. And of course, you know, I do it all the time. Yes, I do. And then I just explain to them when they ask me, well, where's Dilly from? I say she's indigenous to Ohio. What, was she an Indian? No, she's a deer. Well, you know, if you're going to, you know, you treat all animals equally, you might as well adopt a little deer. Usually someone around there knows my politics and usually gets some looks like, where is he going with this? Is he actually talking about a non-European rabbit being adopted by a white rabbit? I can't believe that. What's Horace the Avenger up to here? Where's he going with this? And then I lower the boom on him. Well, yeah. Well, you treat all animals equally. You can't tell the difference. Why? You couldn't tell the difference. The average listener didn't know what I was talking about. You always got to flip the script on a white rabbit, make them uncomfortable, because they are treating them just like they're treating them just like little adopted animals. They're treating them like the bear. You know, we prefer the bears in Yellowstone, non-interference. You stay on your side and we'll stay here and, you know, fine. We'll work out some win-win situations. We don't want the black bears in New Jersey because down there at Haiti, we got the black bears in New Jersey. Once you interfere, you got to always interfere. That's a constant struggle. So we want the big brown bears, a Yellowstone, the grizzlies. But there is a third option when they adopt them bears. Well, a bear can't breed with us and a bear can't vote, so I don't really care. It's pretty weird. It can be dangerous. Adopting a deer apparently can be really dangerous. But hey, you know, if you go back to ancient Greece, there are certain white nationalists that say, Horace, you know, it's the fault of these people that own Hollywood. It's the fault of this person. It's the fault of that person. Well, it's true that they stoke certain things. But you see, you can't light a candle if it doesn't have a wick. I'm going to repeat that. You can't light a candle if it doesn't have a wick. You have to understand our traits. If you go back to ancient Greece, you're going to have ancient Greek philosophers bitching and moaning about the rights of animals. Yes, you are, because race is real. We did not just change overnight and become like this. They've lit a wick, but they've lit a candle, but the wick has to be there for the thing to burn. And you know, there was an Egyptian pharaoh, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, that actually had pet African pygmies. Pygmies! Little pet pygmies. Not in his house necessarily, but they stayed out in the pen. They'd come sing and dance for him and dance around. It's a true story. I swear. But, you know, they're always adopting something. So we prefer, if they're going to stick to exotic pets, you know, you got to take the best of the worst. Dilly the deer's fine. Yeah, she's indigenous to Ohio. Pretty much a vegetarian. She's eating salad with the rabbits. You can look up this story. You can Google Ohio family adopts deer as a pet. I pull this stuff up all the time. Every white rabbit listening to this will be within 4 or 5 blocks of one of these stories, and they will run it in the local newspaper if they don't run it on TV. You've seen these your whole entire life. They're all over YouTube. White rabbits adopting some little pet. But what you don't realize is they're treating them just like animals. They treat all animals equally. That's wonderful. We need to get into a more healthy thing. And for all practical purposes, if you're going to adopt something, adopt Dilly. Adopt a little deer. She can't vote. She can't breed with us. She meets both requirements. Yeah, not just one requirement, because you never know. A little blue smurf-like aliens might come down and start adopting them, but they could vote, maybe. Who knows? You got to really think about things ahead with white rabbits. You don't know what they're going to do. They're always going to care for animals. What we got to do is steer it towards something like Dilly. And you do it by pointing out the obvious and making them very uncomfortable. Most of them are never going to adopt a Haitian. But the people that do don't treat them any differently than Dilly's owners treat her. No, they don't. It's so much so that when you tell a story of Dilly the deer, or I forget the one I told before, was about a little crow. They adopted some little crow in the UK or something. These stories are, you've heard them. I mean, you could probably tell me 100 of your own. But the thing of it is you don't know what a white rabbit family is adopting till you see the pictures, until you hear the whole story. Because if you really think about what I just told you, you cannot tell. You could not tell where I was going with that. You can't. You can't unless I say Dilly the deer. You don't know. You just don't know because they treat them the same. They're giving this deer ice cream. She taught her how to turn on the water. Teach her how to turn on the lights. I mean, it's a pretty bright deer. This is a bright deer. She has her own twin bed. She's standing on the bed in the picture. It's funny. You know, the deer's no bigger than a dog with long legs. So it's like a dog with long legs, but she looks comedy. But hey, you know, whatever. But that's what I do for adoptions. I usually go into one of my adoption stories, and people that know my politics have no idea where I'm going with that. And then I do the 180 and I lower the boom on them. I tell them the obvious. You're treating them all like animals. You might as well adopt something that can't vote and can't breed with us or can't inherit property. Well, actually, Dilly couldn't inherit. I think she's in a will. So saying that Dilly can inherit property. You know, she can inherit property and they leave a will and you got to take care of Dilly. Some independent farm has to take care of Dilly. I'm guessing that's what it is, because an animal can inherit property. It's very weird stuff. But white rabbits are white rabbits. Race is real. You got to use things to your advantage. But that's what I do in a case of adoption. I don't tell. They tell their adoption stories that are wonderful. I tell mine. I just never tell them what animal it is until the end. And once the end comes, that's usually when I get the, oh my goodness, the last time I did this, and I did this just recently, because you know all these white women talking about Haitian babies, white men not really, but there's always, you know, poor little Haitian babies and everything else. And I told a wonderful adoption story. They're talking about this couple on TV was picking up their two Haitian children they adopted. It's been all over the news. It's one down in Florida, I think they went and got them or something. I don't know. They're talking about that. And I told my own adoption story. They weren't expecting that. No, but the funny thing is, if you look this case up, this is a great case. This is just one that was, it says in the news report from Ohio. This is, I don't even, KSDK.com. It's Ohio family adopts deer as pet. And you can watch a video on Dilly. It's only 37 days old. There's one of these, probably in every newscast. You know, the little squirrel that can ride a skateboard was adopted by the white rabbit family. Well, it's always white rabbits. You know, anywhere else on the planet, they'd be eating Dilly. We adopt her, take care of her, and they'd go to war if someone tried to hurt Dilly. But that's what I do with adoption, because there is a third option. They like adopting pets. What you don't understand is what I just pointed out to you is they don't differentiate. They differentiate with little white rabbits most of the time. I mean, but then again, sometimes some pets get treated better than little white rabbits, but they treat all animals equally. But at the same time, they know we're not animals and we're supposed to take care of things. It's kind of funny. It's another paradox. But I flip the script on them. I tell my own adoption stories and I make everyone uncomfortable. Your job is to point out the obvious. That is mantra thinking, to get underneath their skin and crawl around a little. It's insidious. But then again, if you do it real, they're not going to know where you're going with it, even if they know your politics. They're like, wow, is he actually telling a nice story about some little speckly brown rabbit adoption? You know, this one lady said, I knew you were going to do something. I just knew you were going to do something evil like that. I just knew it. I just knew you were going to make me think horrible thoughts. They always just freak out. She's like, I just knew it was too good to be true that you're, I'm being honest. It's total honesty. That's all you got to be, is honest. You know, but that's a good question. I don't think I've ever, I haven't listened. I haven't went back and listened. I've done quite a few of these now, but I never told you that one, but that's what I do. And, it will get them every time. In your opinion, it's racist. You would have to, you know, I mean, why, you know, what you're doing is discriminating against Dilly. You saying Dilly doesn't need a home? You're saying Dilly's unimportant in the scheme of things? You can go any way you want to with it. You know, you can go into a standard mantra. You know, everyone says there's a race problem. In your opinion, it's racist. You're just saying because I'm white, anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Or you can just start saying they're discriminating against Dilly. You don't treat them any differently, so why would you discriminate against Dilly? Oh, well, yeah, but she's a deer. What do you mean you didn't treat? You didn't know what I was talking about. You thought I was talking about some little adopted non-white baby. You had no idea I was talking about a deer because you can't tell the difference in how you treat them. I'm just pointing out the obvious. Make you uncomfortable? Yeah. Truth always makes some people uncomfortable. But that's what you got to do. You got to point out the obvious in a way, and they will not like it. But it's true. You know, some will admit it and accept it and whatever. It makes them uncomfortable, though. But that's your job. And so that's what I do. But it is a valid question. And that's precisely what I do. It works. Most of my listeners most likely didn't know where I was going with that. What is he talking about? Is it going to be some rape, some murder? That's their media impression, you know. He's going to tell a story about a little speckly brown rabbit that grew up and raped everybody. No, I'm talking about a successful adoption of another animal, Dilly the deer. It's funny stuff, but that's mantra thought. I'm going to touch on a subject I've touched on before, but I'm going to touch on it from a different angle. I've told you before that white rabbits have a propensity, we have the propensity to think horrible things about ourselves or things that really don't make any sense. You know, why did our ancestors think they were evil sinners going to burn in hell? Why do your neighbors think they're racist? Why do they buy into that? Well, I'm going to flip the script a little bit, and I've done this in the last week, and we're going to talk about why most white nationalists or white racialists really don't buy into white supremacism. Everyone in the world, most non-white rabbits, are white supremacists. You will be hard-pressed to find a white rabbit, even a hardcore racialist that is an actual white supremacist. They will not believe in our capabilities when everyone else will. And I'm going to give you a great what you see is what you get example. And we're going to have a discussion because I've had this with other I've had this discussion with black rabbits before and even Asian rabbits and stuff like that. It's kind of funny. But on Stormfront, and it's been taken down now, the thread is closed. On Stormfront, I posted a link in a post, and this is also on whitenewsnow.com. And it was under Hugo Chavez as a white supremacist. And I actually linked the whitenewsnow.com, because I knew they wouldn't take the thread down, to my Twitter. And I put a post, and the post was the same post I did on Stormfront. Hugo Chavez is a white supremacist. Most white nationalists say that race is real, however, many do not understand the implications of what they are saying. And then I put a post, Hugo Chavez mouthpiece says U.S. hit Haiti with an earthquake weapon. And this is on Fox News. This is a true thing. And it talks about the Russians had alluded to him that we had an earthquake weapon and all kinds of stuff like that. And then I put, this is a lesson of mantra thinking. Non-white rabbits actually believe race is real. White nationals are still struggling with this reality. Read Bob. And I put a link to Bob. And I did it to see what they'd say, because it's Stormfront. And the response was absolutely comedy. They got upset, and some of them that know, you know, obviously, I'm posting under, I think, Follow the White Rabbit or something on Stormfront. But I did it just to see the response from the, obviously Stormfront has some racialist posters, obviously it has some white rabbits, so on and so forth. I did it just to see what they responded. Oh my goodness. Oh, the tinfoil hat crowd is here, and oh, this and that, and this is totally absurdity. Why would you post that on Stormfront? And all kinds of stuff like that. It's just funny to see the reaction, their first response to me doing that. But Hugo Chavez, I mean, obviously, if you think we have an earthquake weapon, you're a white supremacist. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty astounding statement, referring to our technological ability. And what you will find out about non-whites, and some said that Hugo Chavez doesn't matter. He doesn't matter to us, but most of the world read that. Most of the world read that, and most of the world believes we're capable of developing an earthquake weapon. Yeah, if you don't believe me, most of the racialists in Anglosphere, especially in America, have heard Africans your whole entire life talk about all this crazy stuff we're capable of doing, all this wild. It always involves some secret, top secret weapons technology we're using against them. They'll believe we can develop it. Not only that, they'll believe we'll actually do it. I remember growing up, I walked through an area when I was going, this one school I went to, and there would be these little black boys on the corner, little black rabbits in bow ties, and they were selling this paper called The Final Call. It's issued by the Nation of Islam out of Chicago. I don't know if they still sell it. But you could buy one for a dollar or a couple dollars. I can't remember. And I used to buy the paper, and it was comedy what they would say. It's like a black nationalist newspaper. And if you're walking down the street and you're listening to me on your iPhone, I know some of you do that, and there's a little black rabbit in a bow tie selling The Final Call, and you're not racially aware, you probably will be in the near future. But that's another story for another day. Yeah, they sell this in mostly, African in America parts of town. But anyways, and he's selling this, and you know, you read this paper, and they're talking about our technological abilities. We are magic rabbits. We're demigods. I mean, they believe in white supremacism. They openly, Hugo Chavez, anyone thinking we have an earthquake weapon is a white supremacist. I mean, he didn't say Jew rabbits, which is kind of funny. He didn't say pink rabbits, which obviously, you know, if you're going to blame someone, blame them. You know, don't blame us for an earthquake. But anyways, the point is that we will immediately, even as healthy racialists, even healthy racial thinkers, we're thinking, no, we could, but in reality, from their perspective, we do all kinds of technology, so why wouldn't they assume we have something like that? And I'll read what else I posted, and I don't know what got up on Stormfront, but this is what I posted on on whitenewsnow.com. I said, do you believe an earthquake weapon was used in Haiti? Someone actually asked me that. I said, no, although anything is possible when it comes to our race's technological abilities, anything may be probable. I was just trying to shake things up. I'm always fascinated by the fact that non-whites are starstruck at our technological abilities, whereas white rabbits would not believe that was possible. I posted the above first on Stormfront, and they got all bent out of shape. I did it just to see the reaction. It is entertaining to see some white nationalists go out of their way to believe in the super Jew. You know, some of these white nationalists believe Jews have capes, and they can leap over tall buildings with a single bound, and they can fly through the air. European Jewry is smart because they're European. They're not smart because of Judaism. That doesn't make any sense. That's just a modus operandi. They might have good operating tactics and networking and stuff. But and then I end it with, however, when it comes down to what technology the white rabbits may have behind the scenes, they would not even entertain our superiority or the fact that we could have someone clever enough to develop an earthquake weapon. Comedy. And that's what I wrote, and I thought it was kind of entertaining. Then people got what I was doing. You know, they finally got it that this guy's a white supremacist, and their first reaction was that there's no way we could be that superior, that our technology. And the Japanese have some very logical points, and I can't argue with them on this subject. What the Japanese would point out, and this, you know, my first instinct always was to laugh and say there's no way we're capable of that. And I remember reading one of the final calls, and these black rabbits were saying that we had disappearing planes and all kinds of stuff. And this was before the Gulf War, well before the first Gulf War and the stealth bomber. And that we're going to bomb brown people and everything else, something along those lines. And then, of course, we came out with stealth bombers, and we're bombing Iraqis, and they're kind of brown. And so they said, see? And it was kind of funny. But they will always believe in our superiority, where we are likely to disbelieve in it. It is very rare to find someone that can compute our technology and really buy into it. What's funny is when the technology comes out, we accept it that it was there a whole time. We don't really pay attention to it. Our green goddess is a funny girl. We don't acknowledge her like we should, but yet we do. It's kind of we have the propensity to believe the worst of ourselves. I don't know why we do it, but it is there. We have a green goddess. She's there. The whole world knows about her, but we don't really acknowledge her too much. But what the Japanese are saying, you know, I've always said, look, the SR-71 Blackbird, and you can look that up, SR-71 Blackbird, came on service at Groom Lake in 1964. It was flying in 1964, and I suggest you look that thing up. It's a very sophisticated plane to be out in 1964. To have something like that, you're probably going to start developing at least in the 50s. So their point is, you developed that in the 50s, it's flying in 1964, but yet you want us to believe, actually believe, that white rabbits behind the scenes, well, they're not talking about the average guy walking up down the street, but the white rabbits behind the scene, that's all they got? We don't believe that. We don't believe that because you've shared all kinds of stuff with us. You guys are blind to this stuff. You know, you always play down the fact that you're not superior technology when it's just a joke. You know, the stuff we're dealing with is probably antiques to the guys behind the scenes. And there is some logic to that because our stuff never sits still. They're talking about nuclear technology. Your nuclear technology hasn't sat still. Your plane technology hasn't sat still since 1964. There's no reason to believe that this stuff isn't far more advanced than you say. You're just being white rabbits. Well, that's true. Race is real. We acknowledge our green goddess in a funny way. Once she comes out and shows us something, we're okay. If this triangle-shaped UFO thing that Hugo Chavez is saying shot something into the earth and caused an earthquake over Haiti, if that landed, you know, on a white rabbit's house and came and took him for a ride and they showed him how they did earthquakes, he would say, cool, and just never. A week later, it would be no big deal. It's like the internet. They won't believe in it. Once they see it, they'll say, well, okay, that's no big deal. We're funny like that. We are funny, but the rest of the world just sits and shakes their heads. I mean, they think we're the magic rabbits. If you think we have an earthquake weapon, you know, one white nationalist did something clever. He said, I saw where you were going with that, and he PM'd me. He said, I saw you were going with that because I've listened to your broadcast, and that's very funny stuff. And he's like, and you're right. Do you think we would use it? Now, that's maybe a legitimate question. I don't think we would, but I don't, you never know. There's the threat to get the the majorities out of our rabbit holes. Yeah, these majorities that live with us as a minority. You don't threaten them. What you do is give like the third party Yakuza in Japan some kind of wild weapon systems. And then they put out the word to all the African and rabbit leaders in Africa and all these third world leaders that you better go to America and drag those non-white rabbits out of there or they're going to start feeling some tremors. That would be the threat. Hugo Chavez is up dragging out Mexicans. Oh no, they're going to hit us with an earthquake. It's funny stuff, but they believe it. This is what you don't understand. Black rabbits believe we could hit New Orleans with a hurricane. They believe in our technological superiority. They believe we are the magic rabbits. White rabbits, even white nationalists, don't. We always believe horrible things about ourselves. We always play ourselves down. Most of the world doesn't understand it. It's because they understand that race is real much more than we do, actually. It is interesting. It's a great what you see is what you get. And it's never ending, but our green goddess is there and she's tooling up and everyone on the planet believes it except white rabbits. Now, would we use it? I don't know. The Japanese are pointing to certain patents that come out that the Germans have had for lasers. I can't think of the company, IG Farben, chemical lasers. They had the patents coming out of certain divisions, certain subsidiaries in South America after the Nazis were setting up camp down there in the 60s. They're pointing to those patents and saying, well, you have laser eye surgery, and now you're telling us you don't have sophisticated lasers? We know that's a lie. And, of course, we don't believe anything. White rabbits are very funny. They got to see it. But once we see it, it's like, yeah, all right, we got the internet. Big deal. Big deal. Yeah, what's next? No, all hope is lost. It's funny stuff. It's comedy, but it is racial. It is racial. All you have to do is read a Final Call newspaper or read it. Most people just think it's the black rabbits in Africa. No. Some poster says it doesn't matter what Hugo Chavez says. Well, it doesn't matter to you, maybe, but most of the world is going to read that. Most of the world is brown, and Hugo Chavez, you know, he stands up and he shoots off his mouth and whatever, you know. He's down in his own country trying to mind his own business, whatever. But they do read what he says, and it does count, and that's how they think. Most of you don't believe that Africans actually believe we could hit New Orleans with a hurricane, but they do. They believe we're the magic rabbits. They believe we're the little demigod rabbits. And to our technology, to most of the world, to what we do, and the unpredictability with what we do it, I mean, you're dealing with a rabbit that will build a plane and then jump out of it. They see that and understand it more than most white rabbits. White rabbits take Godzilla for granted. They don't really understand her enough, other than she's very real to everyone but the white rabbits. White rabbits will believe the worst themselves, where everyone else is, you know, everyone else on this planet is a white supremacist, but the white supremacists. It's kind of funny. It is the same thing from another angle. So if you're looking at why your neighbors believe they're racist, or why your ancestors thought they were evil sinners going to burn in hell, why do little white nationalists on Stormfront believe Jews have capes and can jump over tall buildings with a single brown, but don't believe we could develop an earthquake weapon? That's a good question. Why? And in the next broadcast, in 31, I'm going to go into some whys. I'm going to go into why the blog is important, why WhitakerOnline.org was important from my perspective. And I think that's pretty interesting. We're going to have another conversation in this piece before it ends. But stick around for another few minutes here. And this is 30, and 30 is going to come out very quickly after 29. I wanted to end this show talking about a couple of the different characters on the website. On the website, there's some graphics that were done, and of course the graphics are all, I came up with the characters. I didn't necessarily come up with the direction of the show, but once the show, the topics that I had to cover to get out a consistent message, or the topics we thought we had to cover to basically target the audience I wanted to target, like the Marisas, the lady that the baby boomer who hit the consistent message on the Voice of Reason radio, the topics we thought she would want to hear, especially post September 11th. It's working quite well for us. But those topics, Once those topics came up with, someone came up with those, they did the research, and I saw the web numbers and everything else. I put together a character profile for the show. And the show is Horus the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit. And Horus the Avengers is a takeoff of Egyptian mythology. Because you can actually visit my temple in Egypt. Yes, I got a temple in Edfu. Really nice temple. The Temple of Horus. But in doing that, I stayed with the theme of Horus the Avenger, and he slays the red hippopotamus. Set turns himself into a giant red hippopotamus. And Set is represented by Saturn. So I've had two questions. They are relevant questions. One very bright listener I have said that thanked me and said that it was, they thought it was pretty clever that I was using the red hippopotamus. And if you look at the picture of the red hippopotamus and you look at his eye, I'm using the star of Saturn. Most of you think that's the star of David, and it is in modern times. It's used as a star of David, but point of fact, it's the star of Saturn. And it goes back to if you go to my temple in Edfu, you can figure such stuff out. It's pretty neat stuff. But anyways, he knows a little bit about astrotheology and all that other kind of stuff, and he thought it was pretty interesting. I stayed consistent. And then on the pink rabbits, I also use a star of Saturn for their eyes. And of course, on my own eyes, I use a beautiful lightning bolt. Yeah, but it's all play off this particular Egyptian mythology of Horus the Avenger and the Temple of Edfu. And the Temple of Edfu, I was going to do something with the falcon, and I still may. You know, he's got I look like a cool little falcon with the little cap on. And you can go to the Temple of Edfu and look online at all this stuff. But that's what it's about, slaying the red hippopotamus. But, in doing that, a lot of people, white nationalists, immediately assume that I'm necessarily talking about they assume that the Jews made up the symbol, the Star of David. Well, it was given to them. It wasn't, they didn't make it up. But there's another question, and that was a pretty good question and comment. If I'm using the Star of Saturn based on the Temple of Edfu and other things else, and yes, I tried to stay, consistent and be a little clever with it without going too overboard, but most white nationalists really, my target audience may not know all about that stuff, but so I thought I'd let them in on that. I had another question from a Jew rabbit. A Jew rabbit wrote that it was a clever show, and that I didn't seem like a traditional anti-Semite. He couldn't really figure out why I would use that symbol and everything else. And I mean, in regards to me being an anti-Semite, let me explain to you that I believe everyone deserves a home, which is to say, I believe all Jews deserve a home. You know, somewhere they can Judaize each other, but I believe they all have to go to their homes. I don't like being Judaized, so that would always make someone like me to someone like you, little Jew rabbit, an anti-Semite, whether I like it or not. It doesn't, to be quite honest with you, I did not take into account your feelings at all. I just didn't do that. I learned a long time ago that would never work for a white rabbit. I try to stay consistent with the theme, whether or not that offends you or not. It doesn't matter. I know it in modern times is the Star of David. I don't care. I didn't really do it to offend you, and I didn't do it to not offend you, because I know that no matter now, and after getting this email, after really thinking about it, the other thing I was going to use, I was going to use a serpent's eye for the pink rabbits. And they would have immediately probably assumed that was anti-Semitism too. It doesn't matter. I mean, I knew a long time ago that I'm not going to win, so I don't really pay attention. I mean, I don't see any Jewish news producers going out of their way whining and crying about not reporting crime in the area I grew up in. You know, the whole entire television stations are pretty much run by a lot of Hebrews. A lot of Hebrews have a lot of power, and they didn't report any crime in my area against white kids or anything like that. And they don't. Like in the United Kingdom, there's a lot of Hebrew power in the media, and they don't go out of their way taking into account our feelings. At least maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm on the wrong planet or something. Maybe I'm not seeing things correctly. But I didn't really do it one way or another. I was just trying to stay consistent with the theme. And when you hit astrotheology, you can include a lot of other things that people immediately assume is talking about them, and it may not be. But that's the interesting point of astrotheology. But I will tell the little Jew rabbit a story. I'll tell you a funny story on how ridiculous your elites are. In Canada, there was a time, I don't know what year it was a few years back, there was a white rabbit, one of these New Agers that went in there, and they were, they basically just threw a fit over this white rabbit. They said he was an anti-Semite, he's this and that, and they wanted his books banned. I don't know what all they wanted, but typical Jew rabbit elitester type stuff, ADL Jew type stuff. And I didn't know who this guy was. And I'd never in a million years heard of him. So immediately, since we're talking about banning his book and making him an anti-Semite and saying neo-Nazis were listening to him and everything else, I immediately did research. I immediately Googled his name, and his name is David Icke. I didn't own any of his books, but a friend of mine had gotten one of his books just to see what this guy was all about. And I read the book after him, and I started dying laughing. This guy says white rabbits came from Mars, and there was a serpent race that infected them, and this serpent race lives in a fourth dimension, and it's feeding off white rabbit blood. Yes, it has to feed off blonde-haired, blue-eyed rabbit blood. And immediately after writing this book and going on tour and talking about the Queen of England's a big milky white serpent that turns into human form and drinks white rabbit blood, all this crazy stuff this guy says, these Jew rabbits are yelling anti-Semitism, saying he's covertly talking about them. I fell on the floor laughing. I mean, I wouldn't even know who this guy is. This is a sci-fi novel. But yet, I mean, there's nowhere in this book where he says Jew rabbits. I mean, where do you get that from? But you see, that's the point. If you're never, and he says, I'm not anti-Semite, I'm not. Well, it doesn't say anything about Jew rabbits. He's talking about the Queen of England, and George Bush is a big milky serpent, and he's drinking white rabbit blood. You'd have to read this stuff. David Icke, the greatest secret. And the Aryans from Mars theme probably goes back thousands of years. Who knows? Who knows the truth beyond that? But obviously, if you got serpents in the fourth frequency, that's the ultimate gotcha, because I can't see them. You know, when you have something this unnatural, as far as elites in the West, white rabbits are going to dream up all kinds of fantasies. The funniest thing about it was that they were yelling anti-Semitism about a guy who wrote a book about serpents drinking white rabbit blood, and the Jew rabbit elites immediately thought he was referring to them. That's what's comedy. So that's another great example of trying to do something around Jews or thinking about your feet. It's impossible. It's impossible. So if I were to put an eye of the serpent, what I was going to put, I'd probably get emails over that. It doesn't matter to me. I didn't do it to offend you, and I didn't do it to not offend you, because I don't. It seems like a big waste of time to me. But that's just my two cents. And there are. There are those that don't know about astrotheology. There are four major faiths. There are three minors. There are like seven cults of power. There's solar, that's the worship of the sun. There's lunar, it's worship of the moon. There's stellar, worship of the stars. Then there's Saturn, or Saturnarian faiths. And Saturn has a section of its own because it's a big boy. Saturn's a very big planet. They're called Saturnarian. And then there's three minors. There's Venus, the worship of Venus, Venusian, Dionysian, or the worship of drugs, which drug cults are huge on this planet. And then there is Vulcanus, or the worship of fire. Most white rabbit faiths naturally are a combination, but believe it or not, Judaism is by and large Saturnarian. Yeah, and there's some influences in Christianity from Saturnarian too. That's why that Pope wears the ring of Saturn on his head. But that's a little astrotheology for you. If that type of thing interests you, that stuff is all online now. But I use a star of Saturn, and I realize in hindsight, I was talking to one white nationalist, and he immediately assumed he knew who it was, and I didn't really realize what he was alluding to, that he thought it was the Jews. And it's a little bit broader than that, because they don't own the thing. But most people associate that with Judaism. I understand that. So that's a little education for you on my thoughts, at least why I did it. But it wouldn't matter if it offended you or didn't offend you. It doesn't, I don't think anyone can win over not offending you. After seeing you accuse, your elites accuse someone talking about something coming, feeding off white rabbit blood, of immediately covertly talking about the Jews, there's just no winning. Look it up. You can't walk around worrying about what these people think. They don't worry about what we think, so anyone else on this planet, apparently. At least they're elites. So that's my opinion. That's a little update on astrotheology. But the star of Saturn, I don't know that anyone owns it particularly, but it is staying with the consistent theme of the Temple of Edfu and slaying the red hippopotamus. I use the star of Saturn. And Saturn has had a big influence, according to the astrotheologists and all that stuff over the past few thousand years. It's had a huge influence. Islam is another heavily Saturnarian faith. That's why they run around that black cube. The black cube is another symbol of Saturn. The rings, you know, the little kippah that the Jews wear. Well, the Jews wear it because the Pope wears it. And the Popey Pope wears it and the Cardinals wear it. That's for the rings of Saturn. That's it's something to know about. Yeah. But anyways, that's another story for another day, but that's a little astrotheology. What else can I say on the issue? But going out of your way trying not to offend Hebrews is always a losing battle for anyone. Either you understand what I'm saying and you get it, or you don't. I didn't really think about it until I got an email, but I did have one white nationalist I was talking to on Skype. A very bright fellow who immediately assumed it was the Jews, and I tried to explain that to him, and I didn't realize till afterwards that he didn't know anything about Egyptian mythology or astrotheology, which there's a primer. If you use the sun, you know, this stuff is never ending, but that's my motivation behind it. So it wouldn't matter to me one way or another. And now thinking about it, if I would use the eye of serpent or anything else, you would immediately thought it was you. If the Jew rabbit leasers are going to think blood drinking lizards from another world are immediately, Jewish, what won't they think? You know, I mean, look it up. So that's that on the character play, on where I came up with that and why I did that. I tried staying consistent with my temples, and you should always visit my temples if you go to Egypt because they look pretty cool. Yeah, I'm the guy, I'm the little falcon wearing the hat. Yeah, I'm a pretty cool looking guy. But rabbits can turn into falcons, I guess, at that temple. But anyways, I was just trying to stay consistent. Either you get that or you don't. This is another episode of Follow the White Rabbit, and I'll be back with you on 31 later on in a week or so. This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.